Three of the Pro Way is brought to you by That Legendary Play. From championships to rivalries and game winners, visit ThatLegendaryPlay.com to find your favorite sports moment immortalized forever.
Hey, what's up? This is Joey Kemp from Three of the Pro Way. This week on Three of the Pro Way podcast, we sit down with Deron Jenkins. Deron discusses his journey growing up in St. Louis, raised by a single mother that instilled values that pushed him to excel on and off the field. He talks about his progression from high school to becoming a four-year starter at the University of Tennessee and a second-round draft pick of the Baltimore Ravens. Deron shares his transition from a solid NFL career to the difficulties of trying to figure out life after football. Deron talks about venturing into the entrepreneurial space as a licensed general contractor, renovating properties, building homes, starting two companies named DY Construction and DY Properties, as well as starring on the HGTV show Flip or Flop Nashville. All right, welcome to Three the Pro Way. We have my counterparts, Kevin Dyson, Todd Campbell. We have a very special guest this evening. I've known this guy for close to 30 years. We came in the University of Tennessee together in 1992. Freshman, this guy started all 4 years, all SEC player, was drafted in the second round, 55th pick to the Baltimore Ravens, where he spent the bulk of his career, also spent some time with the Chargers and ended his career with the Tennessee Titans. This guy, his name is Deron Jenkins. Welcome, Deron.
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Jeez. What up, man? 30 years. God,
I was just about to say, why you have to say 30 years? You could have just said we played together. I knew him. You can even say since, coming out of high school, but you had to put 30 years. You really did it to me right there.
It's a lot of stories in those 30 years, too. And
yeah, a lot that we can't discuss. It's all in the black book. There you go.
Hey, let's take this back to, I know a lot about you because obviously we spend a lot of time together. I know a lot about your background. For those who don't know, you're from St. Louis. Talk about your your childhood and your siblings and your mom and how you grew up in St. Louis.
I am the youngest of three. A lot of people think that the youngest, gets a lot of attention or gets baby. But in my case, my brother was kind of sickly growing up. He had a brain tumor. And so he had to have brain surgery. So, when I was young, the youngest of three and a single parent, I kind of had to grow up a little bit before I really wanted to. Looking back, it really made me look at things a little bit differently. Made me had to be, a little bit stronger, a little bit more independent. So, growing up in the inner city of St. Louis, you kind of had to know your wits, know what was right and what was left and which places not to go. We found our way into sports, man. My brother and I both played everything and we just really enjoyed it. It kept us busy. We had one of those moms that, street lights come on, you better be on the porch. And if you wasn't on the porch, she was coming to get you in her robe and house shoes.
Yeah, so your mom doesn't play.
She was going to whoop you all the way home. So that was one of the reasons why, I feel like I got a little fast because, when she came out, she was trying to embarrass you.
I know that feeling.
I'm running. No, man, there go your mama.
Hey, we're not laughing at you. We're laughing with you.
With you, bro. Hey, I have a story from 7-Eleven. I could not. It was about a half mile of a whooping. My God, she came and got
you. Let
me.
Her catch you,
man. Hey,
I can't believe
really
you. Let
I didn't think she was really gonna whoop me, but she did from the 7-Eleven to the house. Well, ooh,
I really thought my mom at one point when I was little, I thought she was the strongest woman on earth because she would literally me up by my ankle and hold me up upside down. How is she doing this?
Yeah.
And you probably still wanted that today. My mama? But it's a great thing because obviously, you know, when we had that type of structure and discipline early, when you were probably, you know, 12, 13, 14, we were probably, of course, bigger and probably stronger than our moms, but you didn't even try them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? At that point, you're like, you know, I think she can still do it.
Yeah, I'm still scared of mine.
I still don't talk the same thing. I'm 45 years old.
Slap me.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you. Hey, DJ. And
hold on, though, but Todd, you said like that happened yesterday, bro.
I know. That's what I said. I said she will. I didn't say she used to. I said she will.
Just did. I thought you were like, yeah, you put your head down. Like yeah, that just happened.
She only 5 feet tall. That's the sad part.
Hey, DJ, man. So we're going to get into this a later, man, because your background tells a lot about you now, about the hustler that you are now, the entrepreneur that you are now. But I want to still stay back when you were a young man, and common sense is not so common anymore. And street smarts is not necessarily, especially with all the suburbs and things of that nature, especially all those, we live in suburbs now, and we got little kids and you as well, you know. So talk about that growing up, learning common sense and street smarts, and how it molded you to where you are now.
Well, I tell you guys something that's a little different. So although I was in the city of St. Louis, I was a part of what they call the desegregation program. Mm. So they actually bused city kids to the county schools to integrate the county schools. Wow. Which obviously had better, you know, better schools, more of everything, more opportunity.
And this is in the 80s.
This was in the 80s. Mm. You know, I went to high school in 1989. Mm-hmm. I was in high school. So it sounds crazy, you know, when people think of those type of movements, they think, oh man, that was like, you know, 1920, 1950. No, man, this was in my lifetime, you know? So, it was very interesting. But even before I got to high school, so I went to this little Christian school that was probably about an hour and 45 minutes away, public transportation.
Wow.
So I actually had to catch the bus by myself at 9 years old.
Wow.
So it took me about an hour and 45 minutes to get to school. Now, this ain't the yellow bus. This ain't where they come pick you up at the corner. This is, you go to the bus stop, you get on the right bus. That bus took me downtown St. Louis. I had to get a transfer, get on another bus, and then go to my school. So it took me about an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours one way every day to go to school.
Wow.
So if that doesn't teach you independence, and I was 9 years old. Now, that's probably unheard of now because, you know, it just doesn't happen. But, you know, I was 9 years old doing that all the way until I went to high school. Before that, my sister went to the same school that I did. So she was catching the bus with me. But from 9 to, I guess, 13, when I went to high school, that was the first time I actually went to public high school. But, you know, most kids at that particular little Christian school, I mean, we had like a total population of like 500 people in the total school from like 6th to 12th grade. So it was, you know, it was really small because my mom really wanted, you know, us to have a little bit something different. And she felt like for whatever reason, I needed it the most because I was a child that got stuck in that dang on school for the longest. It was torture, but it was awful. I mean, what kid wants to catch the bus, you know, an hour, 45 minutes each way at that age? I mean, it wasn't fun, but I didn't even realize that everybody wasn't doing that. You know what I mean? Like, I just assumed that other people were doing that and that wasn't the case. So that's really, I would say, was the beginning of when I really started having to grow up and be mature and, I mean, catch the bus and get a transfer. And I'm a kid and I would fall asleep sometimes on the bus, man. And, you know, when you ride the same bus sort of every day, you know, you see the same people And there's a couple times I missed my bus stop and the lady, you know, would hey, ain't this your stop? And I'd get up and have to walk an extra, you know, three blocks because I missed my stop. But it was, you know, when we look at it, it's like, man, you know, it was normal at the time. But now when I look back, I'm like, holy crap, what 9-year-old, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old is on a three and a half hour, four hour bus ride every day? But, you know, it made me who I am. So I guess I can't really, you know, I can't complain. It all had a, you know, a significant place in my life. Yeah. So
think about
everything after.
Think about the sacrifice that your mom, you know, she had to sacrifice to put you in that school too.
Absolutely. Like she was working overtime like crazy. So it wasn't that, you know, she literally was working. She had to work swing shifts. So she was working midnights a lot. So obviously she's sleeping during the day. And so she wasn't even coming home until like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, I had to be at school at 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So there was no way that she could even take me to school in the first place. So, I mean, she was a baller. I don't know how she did it. I don't know when she slept. I don't know, you know, what she did, what them superpowers were, but I wouldn't mind having some of them. But I mean, she was an amazing woman. And, you know, to this day, I think back, I'm like, you know, we always obviously want more for our kids. And, you know, we always try to provide more and try to, you know, bring it, you know, take it up a level. But, you know, when we look at ourselves and see how productive, you know, men we have become, they did something right.
Yeah.
Regardless of where we came from, you know, they did something right.
You know, what's interesting, DJ, is you were the youngest and you were doing that. I'm on the other end, single mom, oldest. So I was the one getting
you had to take care of them.
I had to take care of them, make sure everybody got to school. I would get my brother and sister to school. And then I would take my younger brother to the babysitter and take my butt to school. And then midday, I had to go pick him up. When he was in kindergarten, I had to go pick him up for his half day. Wow. And then come back to school. I had missed recess and everything else. You know what I'm saying?
You missed the best part of the day. You had to
miss recess?
Recess, boy. You better hurry up. Come on, let's go.
You missed the kickball game?
It's a kickball and basketball.
You would think he said he missed lunch or something. Recess.
I missed recess.
Hey, man, that's the best part of the day.
The best part of the day. Recess was more important than lunch, bro. Recess was way more important than lunch.
Right, I'm telling you. But it's interesting to hear your story as the youngest, the responsibility, because usually it'd be your older siblings that had to make sure you were taken care of, but probably different start times, different schools.
Yeah,
that you had to step up.
Yeah, my sister is 7 years older than me, so she was kind of, you know, I'm basically out of the house,
right?
And then my brother is 3 years older than me, and he was already going to the high school that I was soon to go to, which was called Rittner at the time. See, he was already in the desegregation program. Mm. So he was catching, you know, the bus that came to pick them up to take them to the county schools. But I wasn't there yet. Like I was still, you know, my mom evidently said I needed more tutelage than everybody else. So, you know, hey, it is what it is. But it's funny when you think about it now, because I don't tell this story very often, but when I think about it, it was really normal for me. I didn't think it was out of the norm, if that makes sense. Like,
right.
Because back then you just did whatever you had to do. Right. You know what I mean? You got to go to school.
Do what you're told, basically.
Yeah, you just do what you're told. You got to go to school. I know what time my bus come. My bus come at 6:35. I still remember. I don't know why, but the bus came at 6:35. Yep. So I had to at least, you know, my mom tried to wake me up at 5 something, but that wasn't happening. So, you know, I would get up 15, 20 minutes before my bus came, get dressed, hurry up, and run down the street and catch the bus and sleep on the bus and hope that I wake up before my stop.
Right. You know, I tell people my story sometimes. They're like, for real? Because it like don't happen anymore.
Yeah.
People don't do that type of thing anymore. No. You know, buses literally will pick up kids that live across the street from school.
Yeah. And then if the bus is, you know, they got to walk 2 blocks, then the parents is calling now and be like, hey, this is too far.
Yeah. Yep.
Y'all need another stop in between.
Yep. Absolutely.
Or the parents literally walk them all the way to the step of the bus. And I'm like, well, can't you see your child from your door?
Yes.
You really need to walk them all the way. But, you know, I guess times have changed, of course, but, you know, when we were growing up, we just, you know, our parents put on us a certain responsibility, and you just did what you were told, and you just stepped up to that responsibility because that's what your brothers or and or sisters had to do. So mm-hmm. you just did it, and you were the oldest, so you were setting an example. So, you know, the oldest kind of got stuck. My sister got stuck, but she was just, you know, 7 years older, so she was gone.
Yeah. Man, we talk about growing up and, you know, how times have changed and, you know, it's different times now. You know, when we were growing up, we would be gone all day playing something, riding bikes, playing football, basketball. I tell people all the time, like, I never went to a football camp or a basketball camp. Yeah. My football and basketball camp was playing with my neighborhood
in the streets friends
every single day. And that's how I got, that's how I realized I can catch the rest. Because I was really a quarterback, but then I was like, man, I can catch a little bit, like playing with my friends. Right. Yeah. And I always kept that in the back of my mind. And I was a quarterback all the way up until like my freshman, sophomore year in high school. I was like, I wanna catch this ball. I feel like I can catch, right? Yeah. So I think that's the difference now because, you know, you have all these special, you know, specialized camps. You have, you know, parents pushing this and that. But you're missing the aspect of just playing ball and just having fun at that age.
I agree. I definitely agree. How many times did you sweat and stop sweating during the course of a day? Like, and no disrespect, but y'all know we came in the house funky.
Yeah, exactly.
And you didn't even know it, though. You just was outside and, you know, it's funny. I just remember my mama saying, "You smell like outside." Yeah.
Whatever that is, you smell like
whatever that is. You smell like outside.
I don't even know what that means.
You smell like the sun.
I smell like the sun. I don't know.
You just showed yourself. I never heard that when you smell like the sun.
Because that's a Kentucky thing, I guess.
It must be.
I smell like the sun. So, Jinx, I have a question for you, man, and I'm going to circle back to this because I already know my answer, but can you talk about, like, because I think what you do now is so different from what a lot of people do and the expectations of starting something different. But talk about, like, when you were in high school and you started playing football,
mm-hmm.
Because and I'm going to get to my later part later about what you do now, but just talk about how that, like, some – outside of football, some other things you were doing while playing high school football? Or interest, I guess.
Interest outside of sports in high school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, in high school, man, to be honest with you, it was sports and a girlfriend. That was about it.
Hey, you ain't changed the lick. This boy ain't changed in 30 years.
That's how you can't change the stripes, man.
But I will tell you this, though. But I will say, though, because of the structure that I had, you know, my mom was really, really big. Like, the only reason why I think I was decent at school was because of sports. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was about school as well. I had pretty decent study habits and understood just because I had the kind of like the private little small Christian school background where it was, you know, kind of a smaller class, but, you know, our grading scale was 8 points higher than normal. So for example, at the school that I was going to, a 70 and below was an F.
That's what it is now.
So is that what it is now?
Mm-hmm.
So back then, that's what it was. But when I went to high school, you know, a 70 was a D. And I was like, oh, man, this is easy right here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I was getting it, but I'm just saying, oh, man, the grading scale was crazy. So, you know, an 80-something was a B. And I'm like, well, I don't really even have to do that much to get a B. And so that was, you know, one of the definitely things that I would say that my mom really did a great job is instilling, like, okay, well, you know, you can't play sports without this, period. I don't care. And she proved it to me one time. So I played Pee Wee football. And back then, you know, we all were athletes, of course. And So, you know, I was the running back on the team. Like, I was the running back.
You were the guy.
Yeah,
you're
that guy.
I was the guy. And you know, that's, you know, we all were. Obviously, we, you know, we made it to a you know, higher level of playing. And I brought home a D. Mm. And I didn't think it was that big a deal, personally.
She made a believer.
At the time.
Yeah,
she made a believer. At the time. I remember, like, I was 12 years old. And I had already played, you know, so the way that the Missouri works, we don't have like the middle school teams. You play on a club team. So like how middle schools in Tennessee have middle school football teams. We didn't have middle school football teams. We had club teams. And so our club team starts at 8 years old, 7 and 8 was the first year. And then you just keep moving up with the same kids. So you essentially play with the same kids all the way till you're 13, which is typically eighth grade. And then you go to your high schools. And so I've been playing with these same group of kids since I was 7, 8 years old. So I was 12 years old. You know, my bridge is big, you know, by then. All right, mom, all right. I brought home a D on a progress report. It wasn't even a regular card. It wasn't even a quarter report.
Boy, I know this story. I know this story. My mom did the same thing about
everybody. Everybody knows this story.
Boy.
I tell you, she said, oh, it's over. I said, but mom, what, you know, give me some time. It's done. Mm. So of course, you know, my football coach calls, right? I'm like, yeah, he gonna talk to my mom. Listen, single black mom, yeah. Dude in the 80s.
She ain't got time.
She didn't care about no touchdown, no yards, no, she ain't care. He ain't playing. Yeah. And if you call my house again, he ain't gonna never play again. And I just cried. I promise y'all.
Yeah, man.
To this day, that is probably the hardest I ever cried. Because you gotta think, sports was the only thing that made me want to go to school in the first place. Like that's the only thing that made me want to move was sports. But at the time it wasn't just football. It was all sports. You know, we played multiple sports. Now you specialize when you know, 3 years old, you're going to be a baseball player. Yeah, well, no, exactly. You know, back when we were coming up, you play baseball when it's baseball season, you play football when it's football season, you play track, you know, you play what you play.
Yep.
But from that moment, I was like, okay, this lady for real. But at the time, I mean, I was devastated. And so I actually do attribute that particular experience to my hunger for the sport and just for succeeding, to be quite honest with you, because it was really pivotal, because that was the first time that I could not participate in a sport since I was 7 years old. Mm. And so you get a lot of time to think when you're not doing that, you know, and you're used to doing that and you've been doing it, you know, it sounds like, you know, a while, but from 7 to 12, sports is everything to you. Like you right, just, what else you do? You know, you go outside and play, but I was on punishment. I couldn't even go outside and play.
Oh, Adrian, you sitting on,
my
couch right now, man. I feel like we're therapy right now, man.
I need to be on that side.
We just wrapped.
But yeah, so it was a great experience. And it really taught me that she was for real. But it also taught me that it was important. I didn't really understand why at the time, to be quite honest with you, because you're 12, you know what I mean? So you just know that that's bad because mama didn't let you play no more. Mm. And so when I came back at 13, which was the last year you played before you go to high school, dude, that was probably the best football I've ever played in my life, because it made me, I missed the game.
Yeah.
That moment was the moment I wanted to play football. Right. Up until that point, I didn't know which one it was going to be. You know what I'm saying? Because we played them all. And I thought I was going to be a shortstop. Because back in the day, you know, Ozzie Smith, I don't know if y'all know Ozzie Smith, but Ozzie Smith, yeah. You know, Cardinals. Yeah. And he was like my idol. He'd run out there and do the flip and, you know, the backflip. And I'm like, I could do that. So I would run and do the flip. And I'm like, yeah, I'm playing shortstop. But, that year, you know, back then we only played 6 games, and we had a banquet at the end of the, you know, because it was it. And so my particular football team had never lost the game. We were like 55-0 from the time from eight to ended in the eighth grade. And so that's never been done at that. Wow. That's never been done before at that time. And so we're at the banquet and, you know, our coach never gave an MVP in all of the years. He never gave an MVP. So the coach was spitting out everybody's stats and whatever. But again, at the time, you don't really understand stats. And I didn't even really understand what he said till much, much later when I got older. And I was like, well, how did I even do that? So he gets up there, he's talking about everybody's stats and whatever, so-and-so, whatever. And he said, well, this year, it was a special year. Y'all know I don't normally give out MVPs. And he was like, but I got to give one to Jenkins, because that's what everybody called me back. And it was like, I got to give one to Jenkins. And I'm like, okay, everybody was surprised. And so he spit out my stats. I had like 22 touchdowns, 1,275 yards, and we only played six games. Wow. And I was like, I didn't even know what that meant at 13. Right. Now, once I got into high school and I understood stats, I was like, oh.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. That wasn't bad. No, I promise you. Because at the time, you know, we just play, dude. I mean, you just want to play when you was a kid. I didn't care about no stats, man. And really, we only got to play. I only played like three quarters every game, literally. The fourth quarter, we didn't play because we were smashing people. But that's when I realized my passion. It wasn't even about the yards. It wasn't about the touchdowns. It was, this is what I want to do.
Game.
And it was just pivotal. And I guess you can credit my mom for saying you can't play no more because you got a D. And I never got another D ever again, ever. not in high school, not in college. I just never got it. Now I got a C. Don't get it twisted. Yeah. Yep. But I never got another D again.
I got the exact same story. That's crazy.
Hey, DJ.
Except for basketball was my thing.
Yeah.
Really? So you were just going to be a 6'1"
point guard. Hey, you could tell me now.
I was nice too.
Mine was so bad. The same thing. She took me out. She had me progress monitored. But I cried. I pleaded. I said, Ma, because I told her, I'm going pro. I'm going to buy you a house. I said, how am I going to be able to buy you a house if I can't play? She wasn't going. She
I'm going to buy you a house.
That's your best.
That was my cell phone. I'm going to buy you a house.
If I can't play.
I'm tired of living in apartments in Canada. I want a house.
I don't think she cared, bro.
She didn't care. Right. She's like, she told me, said, I'm not raising no dummies.
Hey. So, yeah, I heard that one like once or thrice.
Yeah. Hey, Jinx, obviously you were sought after in high school at Rittner. Why Tennessee? And what other schools were you seriously?
Here come considered? that ball for life.
You know what I'm saying? We got to talk about these balls.
He's been waiting on this part. The whole interview, he's been waiting on this. That ball for life.
You know what, man?
I'm just asking questions here.
Well, it was so, you know, Missouri was in, you know, the conferences, of course, was different. So it was like the Big Eight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously Mizzou's in the SEC now, but back then, you know, they weren't. It was like Big Eight, was it Big Eight, Big 12, or Big 10? It was Big Eight, whatever. And so because it's in the Midwest, I was really recruited hard by like Midwest colleges, like, you know, your Michigans, your Nebraska, Missouri, Kansas State, Iowa State, all those schools in the middle. Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And the short answer is my high school wasn't very successful. So we lost a lot. You know, we didn't have a great team. But I guess my goal in college, in high school, was I always wanted to make the team we were playing against remember me. That was my thing. For whatever reason, I don't care if it was because I played running back in high school. And I'm like, I don't care if it's a punt return, a kick return, interception return. I don't care what it is. I just wanted them to remember me. And so a lot of the ways that I actually ended up getting recruited was because our team wasn't good and it wasn't like a school that was known for football. We played schools that were known for football. And so like Hazelwood East, I don't know if you guys have heard of Terrell Fletcher.
Oh, yeah.
But Yeah, but T. Fletch played, you know, he was at a school that was in our conference. We had tons of guys that go to big schools that were in our conference, but we was the schools that they beat up on. You know what I mean? Like, that was my school. And so when I was thinking about a program to go to, I wanted one that was successful and would be, I mean, I shouldn't tell y'all this, but I will, it's all good. Like, I was still crying in high school after losing football games.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's no doubt.
I'm just being 100. Yeah, like, yeah, I was still crying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was still crying at the game.
Your boys on it.
Yeah. I mean, that's just real. I mean, I was 15, 16, 17 years old crying after football game.
I did once in college when I felt like everybody wasn't giving it all but me. We
there
played Oregon and Eugene.
There you
Oregon.
Go.
I'm out there grinding. I'm like everybody in the locker room, hee hee ha ha. And I'm like, I'm boohooing. Like,
hey man, this is three to pro way therapy right now.
I'm telling you, man.
You want to lay on the couch too? This is a therapy session.
You need some water, dog? Let me talk to you.
You need some spots tonight, man.
He might have a little cheer.
But it was worse in high school because my school, you know, historically didn't win. So they were used to winning, you know, 2-3 games a year, you know, and the most we won when I was there was 6. Every other year we were like right around 500. And so they were used to, you know, winning 2 or 3 games. And you got to remember, my backstory is I had never lost a football game until I got to high school.
Yeah.
So it's just different for me. And they're looking at me like laughing. I'm like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, no, what's wrong with y'all? We just lost. So I said that to say, when I started looking at programs, I'm like, okay, I want to win. I want to go somewhere where they're like-minded. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the schools were like, hey, you can play right away. But they were schools that were like, you know, they were good schools, but they were mediocre schools. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about winning records and just their tradition. And I remember I really, really liked Tennessee's helmets. And, you know, back when we were coming up, we watched college football on Saturdays. These kids to me today don't really do that. Like, I watch games the entire day when I was a kid. Like, that's just what I did on Saturdays, was watch college football. And I just remember seeing Tennessee and I'm like, that football looks like fun. And you know, it was warm, it's Tennessee, they used to talk about the SEC, and I'm like, that looks fun.
How much did you know about the SEC?
Not a lot. I just knew it was warm because it was Tennessee, it was Florida, it was Alabama. And I'm like, it just looks warm. But
wasn't that Missouri weather?
Nah, man, I'm looking at Michigan. Michigan recruiting me hard. And I'm like, dude, Ann Arbor? Yeah. Dude, it just looks cold the whole season.
And the first two games
looked, oh, man, it just looked awful. And it looked slow. I'm not saying it is, but I'm just telling you my mind at the time, it looked slow. And the SEC just seemed so fast and exciting. And I was really only recruited by two schools in the SEC, and it was LSU and Tennessee. And Arkansas, I'm sorry, 3. LSU, Tennessee, and Arkansas.
And at the time, LSU, obviously Arkansas, wasn't in the SEC at that time, right?
They were.
LSU was. I don't think Arkansas was.
That's okay. Or not? Arkansas wasn't during our time.
LSU was.
Wait, LSU was down during
they were down.
They were down. They were down. Yeah.
They were down. They were down. And so so I visited, you know, my brother had got a track scholarship to University of Illinois. So, of course, they recruited me really hard. But again, it's cold. I went to Champaign-Urbana just because they put the pressure on my brother. But I'm like, dude, it's cold. And I actually visited UCLA.
And how'd you get out of there from going out there?
Well,
I could see
they were coming. No.
You might not be the DJ that we know if you'd have got to LA.
I might be a whole nother person, bro. But their recruiter at the time, because, you know, back then recruiters actually went to the schools and watch film of the players at schools. Of course, now they don't really do that. They just look at clips of huddle and et cetera. Yep. But back then they visited schools. And so this particular UCLA guy was visiting another player that played against us. It was a school called McClure North, and they had like three Division I players. Well, the film that he was watching, they were playing us. And so I think I had like a long touchdown run or something as a running back, and then I like returned the kick for a touchdown or something like that. And the guy, I guess, evidently said, well, who's this kid? And he told him, and so he came to my school. And that's how I actually got recruited by UCLA, because he never even knew who I was. And so he actually left his school and came to my school, called my coach, hey, can you come down? So that's how UCLA happened. It was really an accident. And, you know, I'm like, Cali? Oh, yeah, let's do it.
They were pretty good back then.
They had a good program. They were good.
We played them twice when we were at Tennessee.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they had a really good program. But when I got on the plane, again, you know, we 17, 18, that flight felt like, I mean, forever. It just felt like whatever. But when I got there, of course, it's beautiful. And the campus was, it's beautiful. The city's beautiful. You know, it was palm trees. Never seen that before. I mean, what is that? Where'd that even come from?
People in bikinis and flip-flops and shorts.
On the street. Yeah. Uh-huh. On the street. Some big tree coming out the street. What is that? I don't know. But I mean, it was nice. But, you know, on the way back, I'm like, I felt like my family would never see me. I felt like it was just, I mean, of course my mom would come, you know, but how often are they really going to come from St. Louis, Missouri to LA? You know, that flight is, that's really a lot of planning. Mm-hmm. And so, I want to visit UT. And so UT was my, back then, what do you get, 5 visits or whatever?
I think it's 4 or 5. Yeah.
4 or 5. Yeah. UT was like my second to last visit. So I went to UT. And I got to campus, and it's weird because I was starting to get a little stressed, because, you know, you make those visits during basketball season. And I was getting stressed because I was just getting tired of traveling every weekend. It sounds like fun, but every Friday you leave. And so when I got to UT, I was like, okay, this place is, it's okay. You guys remember that song, Arrest and Development, Tennessee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I got there, and whoever picked me up from the airport, you know, was really hot. You know, that song was hot back then. That was a song that was playing. I was like, okay, that's random. This dude just, you know, whatever, dude, whatever. I'm thinking, I mean, he played and, you know, whatever. I'm not dumb. I'm like, all right, well, cool. So, you know, we go out, get to the campus, you know, Joy, you know that experience. It was pretty cool. Everything was kind of new at the time because Tennessee had just revamped their, you know, facilities. At that time. So everything was really nice, really new. The dorms, the football facility, all that weight room, all that stuff was new. And so I felt comfortable when I went. It was the first school that I felt comfortable at. And so I'm like, okay, well, God, let me know which school it's supposed to be. Because at that point, I was just getting really confused. And when you think back, that's a huge decision for a 17.
It's a life decision.
Right.
Oh my God. Like, it's a life decision. What do you know at 17, 18? Yeah. Like, for real? Like, your parents are still giving you lunch money. Yeah. So, you know, what do you know? And it's a life-changing decision. And you know, at the time, I was like, I was praying. I'm like, just tell me which place to go, because I don't know. And my next trip was Nebraska. And the coach from Nebraska, I had talked to my mom while I was there, and she was like, his name was Coach Brown. And she was like, he just keeps calling. So just make sure you call him when he comes back, or he just keeps calling. I'm like, okay, mom, well, you know, it's okay. For whatever reason, I felt like she wanted me to go to Nebraska. I don't know why. I'm thinking maybe because she was at least familiar with that. I wasn't really sure. But, you know, but Nebraska was like beast mode back then.
Yeah, man. They were pretty good.
They were nasty.
They were dominant.
They were nasty.
Yeah, they're pretty dominant.
And so anyway, so we were leaving Tennessee, got in the car. They were taking me to the airport. The dang on song came on again.
Tennessee.
And I know it's corny. It made what I was like, you know what? I must suppose to be here. I must.
So we need to thank Arrested Development for Deron Jenkins.
And I tell you what, you know, Chester was on my visit too.
Yeah. Chester Ford.
Danville, Kentucky. Yep. And Chester and I went to Illinois together. And so I also felt like, well, how random is it that this guy I met at Illinois 2 weeks later, we at the same place too. And Chester and I talked while we were at Tennessee. And Chester's from Danville, Kentucky. And man, he talked so country back then. He still do, but back then it was real bad. He still does. I'm pretty sure. Oh, he still does. But I could barely understand, like, man, you know what? And I was like, okay, do you like this? But he's like, I'm coming here. Like, oh, let's come here. Like, all right. And so I was like, okay, that's cool. And when I went back home, Nebraska coach called me, literally. It was the next day when I got home from school, and I told him that I wasn't going to take that visit. And man, he lit me up. Wow. We already bought this ticket. You know, we kid, you know, they do buy the tickets in advance. You know, we already bought this ticket, blah, 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 blah. But I was like, coach, I'm sorry. This is just the place for me. Mm. And I just felt like I was relieved. When I was there, I felt relieved. I felt like when I left, it was where I was supposed to come back to. And, you know, all these schools have great education. Let's just be honest. You can get an education if you want an education. You know, UCLA probably had the best if you want to tack it at the end of it. But you can get out of college what you want out of college. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of like a moot point for me, because I felt like, you know, my background was my mom was going to make me get this degree regardless. So that's regardless of where I go. And so when I got back home, that was it. I'm like, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Did you, I was at home a couple of few weeks ago, and I was kind of looking through some old articles. My mom has like all type of stuff that I didn't even know she had, right? I found this article and it said, you know, I was in the seventh grade, I guess. Yeah, seventh grade. And it said that my goals were to go to a good school and to play professional football. And I was really surprised that I even said that. I was even thinking that way during that time. When did you have those dreams of possibly playing professional football or professional anything?
I guess I would say, like, I always had a drive to want to be the best. I think we all have to have that, you know, regardless if you are or not. The only other time I cried like I did when my mom kicked me off the team was there was one guy on my team named Willie Parks that I could not beat. He would beat, you know, we would race at the end of every practice, you know, coach line up everybody, you know, and I couldn't beat him.
You remember that name?
Willie Parks.
Still haunting.
Willie.
You wake up from sleep. Willie.
You want to race Willie Parks right now, man.
I tore him up in high school, though. We raced in track. I tore him up. But I couldn't beat him. Like, literally, I couldn't beat him. And I just remember wanting to always be the best. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was my philosophy. Like, make somebody remember you. Make somebody do something different. Do something special. Just do something that nobody else is doing. And I honestly, I didn't really think about making it pro. I felt like my first responsibility to myself was surround myself around people that want to win like me, that want to play hard like me. Because of my experience in high school, that was my number one priority. When I got to UT, of course, I didn't think I was going to start. You know, back then, you know, you did half of the day playing receiver because the freshmen got there first. You did the first half playing offense, the second half playing defense. And first of all, I thought I was going to be a running back, but that quickly got dispelled.
Yeah, when you saw a little man and
man,
and Aaron Hayden, and
I was 170 pounds when I got there, but after 2 days, I was 165, so I wasn't gonna be nobody's tailback. But you couldn't tell me that, but that was just the facts. And so I was cool being a second team corner. Like, I just felt like, all right, that's cool. At some point, I'll play. worst case, you know, I play my sophomore year or get some time. And I was the third corner coming in, and the other three guys were like seniors. So I really didn't think I was going to play. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, Johnny Majors liked me. Back then, Johnny Jenkins. Majors.
He called you Jenkins. Jenkins.
Call me Jenkins. Jenkins kid. Jenkins kid. And so, you know, it's, to this day, I mean, I have to, he saw something in me, to be quite honest with you, that I didn't. Because I was cool just chilling, just waiting my turn, just being in my spot. Now, I was competing in practice. You know, we always done that or whatever. But I just assumed, because there are seniors in front of you, what freshman just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to start. That ain't how it works, especially back then. Now it's a little bit different.
A lot of competition back then.
Yeah, a lot of competition back then. And I started getting in games a little bit. And we were playing South Carolina. It was probably mid-season. And the guy that was playing in front of me, he made a mistake at a really bad time in the game. He got a pass interference or something. And he made another mistake after that. Johnny Majors came over there and said, put the Jenkins kid in. If you put this other kid, I'm not going to say his name. He said, you put this other kid back in the game, you fired. And so I went in the game and I never came back out.
You didn't.
And it was definitely a growing experience my freshman year, but he saw something in me that I really didn't see. But, you know, I when you're throwing out there with other guys that are mature and they're looking at you like, dude, I don't care what grade you in. I don't care where you think you are. You out here with us. You better step up, bro. Like, we playing. So you raise your level because you know you have to. You got teammates. Like, they not expecting you to get beat. You know what I mean? They're not expecting, they're expecting you to ball. They don't care what grade you in. If you out here, then you supposed to be out here.
Yeah.
So that's a heavy burden, you know, back then, because Tennessee was, we were a powerhouse back then. We were always ranked in the top, definitely 20 to start the season, and typically ended in the top 10 to 15 every year.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had that expectation. But to go answer your question, you know, I would probably say my sophomore year, when I kind of got into the rhythm of things and I started like recognizing certain things. And it's funny, Joy, when we were watching that clip a couple of weeks ago, and you were like, dang, D-Jinx, you had a really good year that year. And I'm going to tell you, like, I never even thought about it, because we all were making plays. Like, it was just the norm. But when I look back, it was my sophomore year. And I had, like, picks against Alabama, LSU. Like, it was big games. It wasn't like,
big-time games,
you know, Southeast, North, South, Central. It was, like, SEC schools. But at the time, I really wasn't thinking that. I was like,
just playing.
This is what we're supposed to do. We got to play, dude. So I would probably say my sophomore year, I was like, okay, I think I'll get a shot. And that's what I thought. I'm like, I think I'll get a shot.
So you get to the league, man. And you, from there, 4-year start, you get to the league. You playing in Baltimore, Ray Ray. That vaulted defense. I used to tell people in 98, they asked me after my rookie year, what was the toughest team you played against? I said the Baltimore Ravens. And y'all were 6-10. And they looked at me like I was crazy. Yeah. I said, nah.
Listen, we were 6-10. Man,
what? It's that man. Year y'all drafted, it was you on one side. Dwayne Starks was just drafted on the other. Yep. Safety was Corey Harris. I go to that front seven. That front seven was just ugly. Oh,
they had Peter Boulware, Ray, Jamie Sharper,
Ray.
Foots. They had, I think we had Tony Saragusa. Michael McQuarrie.
Mike McQuarrie.
We had a front, but it was, that's how they kind of built the team though. They built the team around defense back then. And you know, y'all know Ray Lewis. He's the same Ray Lewis. He had to be born that way. Like, he had to be coming out the womb coaching.
Telling people what to do.
Yeah. Oh, man. Being a leader. Telling people what to do. And just being around him, you know, you was either going to play or not, or get off the field.
Mm.
You know what I mean? He was going to make you raise your level or you didn't get to play. Like, Ray and his spirit around him, it's just you want to – you want to play as hard as him because he plays hard.
Yeah.
You know? He held everybody accountable, basically.
He does, include himself.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things, you know, obviously he got a lot of attention early. But, you know, sometimes when players are have that type of notoriety, they don't always take responsibility in the film room. And y'all know what I'm talking about. But he would, no, that was me, coach. I, you know, blah, 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 or whatever. And I was like, you know, you get respect. You respect that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said it. We were six and 10. And then the next year we were 8-8, which was my fourth year with the Ravens. And I knew we were special. I knew we were special. Like, our defense was ranked like 3 that year. It was something ridiculous, and it would have been better, but we were just on the field so much. Mm. And the offense turned the ball over a lot. And that was my free agent year. And I'm like, these suckers going to be good. Mm. And I got to go.
They're going to Super Bowl the very next year because we were in it. And that's when that's us in Jacksonville. And then Downfield to San Diego. I remember that.
Wasn't my destiny to win a Super Bowl.
They got a daggone ring. They sent you one.
Oh, man. They should have sent me a building one. They could have, like, cut it in half or something.
So let's talk about this, Jinx. And I'll tell you this, man. I think you, and this is kind of what our whole program is based off of, being through the pro way. Obviously, it's about guys who used to play ball, and now we've transformed into other things. I think you personify a lot of the stuff that we do, but I think a lot of people, and this is what I was kind of alluding to earlier. I think a lot of people don't understand, like you are for me, you're a sharp dude. Like, you do a lot of stuff that it's not, the transition is not as easy as like going from this to that, like playing football to this. So like, I think like for what you do now, obviously, can you kind of hit on like when you first got to Baltimore in like your first, I guess that was a townhouse or something?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think that's probably the beginning of where you are now. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think what you do now is like, it's not anything like related to football. Like, it's not like you don't just go to school to do this stuff. I think what you do now is like,
yeah. When I bought my first townhouse and I renovated it, it was really interesting because it's funny because thinking back, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I knew that it was cool. I liked what I was doing and I knew kind of what it should look like, if that makes sense, even though I didn't have the skill set and I hadn't been practicing it, nor did I go to school for it. I just kind of put it together and I was like, okay, that's cool. Now, of course you think you're going to play in the NFL for, you know, 20, 30 years.
Of course.
So you don't really think anything about it. But you're right, Todd. It was something that I did that I felt familiar with. It had some of the similar characteristics of everything that I experienced. It has structure. It has, developing something and getting, you know, and making it look good, which is developing yourself to be a better player or developing, you know, working hard to be a better student. All of it is about development. And so when I went into it, I just could see the townhouse for what it could be versus kind of what it was. And so when I renovated, I lived in it. I didn't think really anything about it, which is strange, because it was something that it almost came natural. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that like my family grew up in construction. All of my uncles were in construction. My grandfather was in construction. So I was around it, but I really didn't, you know, I was just thinking about football. I didn't care about, you know, nothing my papa was doing. He's driving his Bobcat. I'm like, okay, just put me on your lap. And this is really cool. You know, I'm on the machine. But they had always, it's always been a part of my family, but I really didn't know that it was. but I guess I have to still attribute all those steps in life of what we've been through and what gets instilled in you, it can come out, you know, in whatever you choose to do, if you have the right mindset.
Yeah, and you said it, man, because everybody, like JK said, we expect we're going to play for 20, 30 years, right? Nobody goes into professional sports and thinks we all want to be Hall of Famers. We all want to win Super Bowls, be All-Stars and all that kind of stuff. Right. But JK, like myself, Todd, ending college, we've all played ball, and you want to, you got dreams, aspirations, but it ends, whether it be injuries, numbers game, whatever. Now you got to figure out life after that. And you have transformed yourself. Now you, and for those that don't know, you're a TV personality. You started off small construction, as we were talking about. You got into some real estate and investing and things of that nature. What took you into that entrepreneurial direction? You know, was it that kid that was riding the buses in St. Louis? Was it, you know what I'm saying? Or was it just circumstance? Was it just, I don't know what to do, I'm gonna go here.
And how was that transition too? Was it difficult for you after?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the part of my life story that's not as fun to talk about as the other part. You know, the other part was great. You know, I was awesome. Yeah. Everybody loves you. Everybody loved me. I was a superstar. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then, you know, you get to a point in NFL, like Dai said, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, salary cap or money or, you know, wrong coaching staff or wrong situation or just whatever the situation is, injury, it's over. And so you go from, you know, it's really difficult sometimes for people to understand if you haven't experienced it, but you go from always being wanted to nobody wants you. Mm. And, you know, it sounds harsh, but it's the truth. Ever since I was a kid, ever since, you know, Joy, you can relate, and Todd, all of us can relate to this. Dice, we can all relate. You were always picked first on the kickball team, basketball, everything. Whatever y'all are playing. You know, you could be playing. We played basketball with a crate that was nailed to the light post, and I was always picked first. And I'm only saying that to say, fast forward, now you're not picked at all. Mm. I ain't even second or third or, you know what I mean? Like,
just forgotten.
You the dude that y'all had nine people and it was two teams of four and he didn't get picked. Mm-hmm. And he just either had to stand outside and watch or go home.
Yep.
And literally that's what it feels like. And so transitioning from that, to be quite honest with you, was very difficult because, you know, your life is surrounded around that. Not just that's all you are, but those are your friends. That's your, you know, the weight room and all the other stuff you do is just as enjoyable as playing, you know, cracking the jokes and all that friendships and bonds and, you know, your schedule has been the same. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time.
7, 5, 7, 6.
Yeah. Like, and here's the kicker. And of course I'm not ever crying for people to feel sorry, but I don't think you understand that in most cases, I had like little jobs in high school, but in college, like we never transition into anything else because that's all you do.
Yeah. You go from football season to correct. Play basketball in the hyper for a little bit, then spring ball. Yeah.
Then spring ball. So mm-hmm. you never in college really get an experience of trying anything outside of mm-hmm. sports. And you don't have a job in the summer. Like back then, I mean, I think they try to do a better job now. But back then, what internships did they offer us?
I got to stop you there, Jing. I did some internships, bro.
You went to Utah.
I was
Utah. You're in Utah. Y'all ain't have nothing else to do.
Y'all probably going to the NFL. I was in the WAC in the Mountain West.
Bro, it means more,
I had to
man.
Get a job. I was thinking of getting a job. I wasn't thinking about getting drafted.
it just means more, man. I mean, I'm just
talk about y'all didn't work in the summer. Y'all getting cash.
No. I mean, you know, you had a little job, you know, but
it edited that part out, KD. That stuff out, man. We can't talk.
But so when you go from that, you know, you have to figure out what you want to do. And at that time, I just remember I never want to be fired again. Mm-hmm. I never want to depend on anyone else again.
Right.
Because it was being told no over and over. It's hard.
It's being told that you're not good enough.
Right.
Yeah.
For something you've done for your whole life.
You're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll never forget, my last workout was for Detroit. And I had trained my butt off. Like
that one opportunity.
Man, when I tell you, now remember, you don't even really, as veterans, they don't really even take the 40 as seriously as they do when you first coming out as a veteran.
Sure.
And I remember being in Detroit. We did all, you know, the coach was like, you know, we want to run the 40, you know, you just want to see where you are, blah, blah, blah. But I was ready. Like I had been training. I'm like, cool, we can run it, whatever. Man, I ran a 4.45 on grass at 29:30. I was 30. Mm-hmm. I was 30.
That's pretty good.
I was
good.
30 at that time. I was 30. And I just remember, like, I don't know if I was this. Maybe when I first came out of college, I was that fast, maybe. But I hadn't played in like maybe 4 months or so, 5 months. No, I hadn't played. No. I hadn't played in a year. I hadn't played in a year. So it was the healthiest I'd ever been. It was the strongest I've ever been. And so circling back, when I ran that, I jumped that and they were like, we're going to call you. Like we, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm back in. I'm, you know, this is it. I was mentally ready. Called my agent. They said a tight end got hurt. That game they played that Sunday, a tight end got hurt. So they had to bring in a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And that was it.
So Jinx, tell us a little bit about, so from going from that, obviously, you know, full into the construction thing, because I mean, and the crazy thing is, as Joy was talking about 30 years, I just realized we've been knowing each other for 20 years.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just as old. Y'all
got to stop throwing them numbers out.
I know, right?
I'm a child. But I just met you last year.
Right. So one of the things that I want you to kind of impress upon everyone is how, like, you started this construction thing. And I think what people see now is Deron Jenkins, who with the construction, Deron Jenkins, who is on television and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But I don't think they know. And you kind of hit upon this, but I don't think they know that there's some, you know, you could be on Unsung. There's some bad stuff, like some, you know, some stuff that is not always good.
Yeah.
So just kind of speak about that. Because I think now, man, like, you know, like I have a wall at my house that you did. And when people come to, they're like, oh, that's nice. Like, well, that's a Deron Jenkins wall. You know? So, but at the same time, like I said, there's some bad parts that as far as your struggle, I think it relates to football and those kind of things. Can Absolutely. You kind of speak on that, man?
Yeah. So, you know, once that happened in Detroit, I was down, to be quite honest with you, for a solid, probably 6 months.
Yeah, we've talked about this. We've talked about this multiple times. Yeah.
It's hard, you know, and, you know, I'd been through a divorce as well. Mm-hmm. I was out the NFL, been through a divorce. The economy had crashed.
Mm. It's probably a little depression going on. You might not understand it back then, but
right. You don't get depressed back then.
Right.
What is getting depressed as a black man back then, to be honest? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But being out of football, the divorce, the economy crash, I lost money in this restaurant I invested in, and it was tough. And I had just gotten custody of my son,
mm-hmm.
and he was 10 years old. And so it's me and my son in this house, to be quite honest, that I really couldn't afford because, you know, I didn't have no money like that coming in.
actually, and so, I really liked that house. I was.
I still like that house. That basement was.
I would like to have urinals in my home now. So I'm throwing that out there for you, bro.
But, you know, I had to figure out what I was going to do. I had to stop the bleeding. You know, I probably at that time had maybe a year and a half before things would have got like
bad,
mm-hmm. to be honest with you. Yeah. And so I was like, I don't want to get fired. I didn't want to be a coach. And so I'm like, what am I going to do? And I'm like, I really like real estate. And so I met this, this older lady who done real estate part-time. And, she's like, I can find you some old houses or whatever. And then that's how it started. So I was using my own money, what I had left. And I would go in, you know, buy one house because that's all I could really do and pay for the renovation with, you know, out being terrified. Because, you know, that was it. Like I didn't have a ton of resources to be able to come back. And so I kind of got efficient at it. And to be honest, I didn't make a ton of money. And when I look back, I always call that my college experience, my construction college experience. Mm-hmm. I probably flipped in a 2-year period from like 2003-ish to 2004, about 10 or 12 houses. And I probably only made 120,000, 130,000. Mm-hmm. Between all those houses, not each, all those houses. And so, you know, I was getting like closings where I make like 9,000, 8,000, 10,000. But the blessing is I never lost. And so in 2004 is kind of when you remember we started kind of, everybody was getting houses for free, you know, move in, you know, $5 down, get you a new house. So I'm like, so my renovations were competing against new constructions. And so I took a little time to go to like this contractor's class so that I can get a bigger license so that I could possibly do new construction. And so in 2004, I went to a bank and they gave me a loan, a line of credit. And I had to leverage my 401k.
Mm. Your NFL 401k?
That's all I had.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm all in. It is.
You're all
it
in
is.
At that time. Like you push all is. Your chips in the metal.
And I was betting on me, which I was honestly okay with. And even when I think back at the time, I wasn't even afraid, only because I'm like, if I lose, I'm gonna lose with me. I had lost money in a restaurant. I had lost money in a divorce. I had lost money in the stock market crash. And I wasn't even a bad investor. You know, at that time I was very like conservative, but the market just plummeted. Right. And so that's when I started and I built two houses. And that's all my line of credit would really allow me to do. And like right around 2004, like 2006. So that I did that for like 2 years. Then 2006, I'm like, well, what if I maybe start building duplexes and keep them for residual income? Because I had built one duplex to sell. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as I put it on the market, I had like four offers and I didn't understand why. I'm like, why do people want this duplex so bad? And so I remember just saying, well, let's just, why do I want this? So I went home that day, because at first I was excited. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sell. I'm like, but why so many people want it? And this was like 2006. And so I'm like, well, I think I'm going to keep this. I'm going to keep it. And so I literally, in the next 3 years, I built like 12 of them. And so when I did that, I was like, okay, good. I've stopped the bleeding, because that became kind of like my residual income, so that it allowed me to say, well, you know what? now let's build new construction. Now let's build stuff and sell stuff. And that's kind of when it started really happening construction-wise. So around 2007-08 was when I really started pushing out new construction homes. And I always pretty much done renovations in the interim, but because the market was kind of pushing that way, Nashville, of course, as we all know, was growing. Mm-hmm. People were buying homes. And so that's what really pushed me into new construction right around that time.
So then you get successful doing that for a few years and you transition. Now you a TV star.
That was by accident.
Talk about it.
That was by accident. So they were really looking for minorities, to be quite honest with you. They were looking for minorities.
HGTV.
HGTV was looking for minorities. And so, you know, they kind of were scouring. And Paige, who was my ex-girlfriend, reached out to them and kind of sent them. She asked me, she's like, hey, you know, these people are, you know, they're looking for, you know, some innovation, blah, blah, blah. Would you be interested? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And so she sent them some information about us and they emailed back. And so the way that that industry works, it's really the production companies, and the production companies actually present people to the network. So it's really not HGTV. HGTV sends out feelers saying, this is what we want. Then production companies go out and try to find what they're looking for. And so this company, you know, reached out to us. And so that's how the conversation was the beginning of the conversation was with us and this production company who wanted to present us to HGTV. And so we did what they call is like a spin reel. I think that's what they call it or whatever it is. And so it's just kind of to see our personalities or whatever. And so they did that, sent it in to them, and they were like, okay, we want to do one episode just to see, you know, what y'all can do. And I was nervous because I'm really not a TV person. You know, you never really think of yourself in that type of life. You know, people say, well,
especially your personality too.
Yeah. I'm not on TV at playing football. I'm playing football and they happen to be filming it.
Right.
That's not what you're doing. And so they liked it. And from then on, you know, they wanted to do a season. After we did the pilot, they wanted to do a season. So that was our first season. And, you know, it was tough because, you know, doing the show, being the contractor and project manager at the same time, and then also running my business at the same time, it was, I mean, you see these, you know, it was adding them up, but we had a great time though, but it was tough and challenging, but it was fun at the same time.
Hey, I want to give you a chance to just kind of talk about your business and what you have going on now, DIY Construction.
So now I have two companies. One is DIY Construction, which, you know, I build residential, multifamily, small commercial. That is the company where I build and sell, and or I'll build for investors or homeowners. And then I have DIY Properties. And because of the way that Nashville has grown over the last, what, 6, 7 years, 8 years now, we have become such a tourist city. Mm-hmm. I've created several Airbnbs in which has been really good for me. Awesome. So the bulk of my rentals now are Airbnbs, which I enjoy that as well. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Hey, man, we do this type of deal called This or That to kind of end the interview. We just pose questions and you answer truthfully. not the political, just whatever you want. Whatever you
like. The tie truth or the dice truth?
The truth. Who wants to start?
You know, I'll start and I'll make it easy. I got a feeling it's going to get harder, but I'll start out. Would you do renovations or new build?
Oh, new build.
Easy.
Is that how easy that was? That was easy.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you. Hey, good looking out, bro.
That was for you.
All right.
I'm gonna talk about your sweater. No more. I'm hot sweater off your neck.
I'm gonna keep it in the real estate family. In today's market, buy and hold or renovate flips. Excuse me.
Oh man.
We're just talking about Nashville.
We're talking about Nashville. You're going to buy and hold, you're going to flip and sell. I mean,
honestly, Kevin, that's a tough question. And the reason why I say that is because it all depends on what that particular investor is trying to accomplish. Mm. You know what I mean? So if you're trying to get cash and you want to get cash to like double it and put it back in, then of course sell. You know, sell and flip, or, you know, flip and sell, or build new construction and sell. If you're trying to build, you know, some cash to be able to do something bigger.
You talked about residual income now.
But that's what I'm saying. But, you know, you can, the market is really not going to go down, but I think it will stable off.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I don't think it continue, because if it continues this way, we'd be like California,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Or New York or something, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. And so it can't continue at the current rate that it's at.
Right.
So that's why I say, you know, if the market's hot, if you can sell something to make, you know, 100 grand, you know, 120 grand, you might take your chips and move it to do it again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And make, you know, now that 100 grand has become 240 and do it again. But you can always hold. But if I have to answer the question, I'd probably honestly say a combination of both. That way, because, you know, you're going to hit that capital gains when you sell as well. So, you know, it's tough to hold right now because, you know, that our taxes just got pumped up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, you're going to be paying them, you know, the Davidson County taxes are phenomenal.
Yeah.
I have two. Jinx. So
the easy one first.
I'll do the easy one first. Well, I don't know if this is easy or not, because obviously we came in together, but I redshirted, you played your freshman year. So you had an opportunity to beat Florida, right? So yeah. I had four chances at Florida, 0-4 against them. You had at least have one win against Florida. Obviously, we turned it around against Alabama. My question is, what is more important to you in your mind? Beating Florida your one time, or beating Alabama, I guess, what, two times? Was it two times?
We beat them twice.
When you were there?
Yeah, when we were there, we beat them twice. I think, I beat them twice. You beat them your senior year?
Yeah, I mean, of course. Don't ask a silly question like that.
Boy, y'all did a whole lot of talking about the Crimson Tide right now.
Don't ask that.
Come on, man.
That's a silly question, Deron. Don't ask me no.
Honestly, I can answer that one. That's a pretty easy one, though. I would say Alabama wins, because at the time, I think Alabama had a, I don't know what, 7-8 year streak at that time. And I think because UT made such a big deal out of Alabama, like, you know, we came in, it was Alabama week was different than every other week. Like, the coaches' pants were a little bit tighter.
the curses were a little bit louder.
Oh yeah, the whistles were louder. Everybody, you know, can't even eat at lunch because they upset. And, you know, the same mistakes you made 2 weeks ago that was just a little slide to the left, they're screaming at you for. And the scout team now had these red jerseys and red, you know, pennants on their head. And I'm like, why y'all doing this? We know it's a scout team. What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
So I think because they imposed Alabama so hard during Alabama week, I would have to say that, because we didn't do that in Florida. We didn't do that when we played Florida. We either won or we lost. We prepared, and it was what it was.
All right, this, I'm going to get you one last question to get you out of
they
here.
They had a crazy defense, though. That defense.
Oh, yeah, yo, man. Early 90s.
George Teague, Antonio Langer.
Oh, man.
They had a squad. They
had a squad.
Mansky Hall.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last one, man. So I've known you for a long time. I'm not going to continue to say how long.
It's been only like 5 years. Yeah, right. You say 30 one more time. Yeah,
right. But we all have, like, when you play sports or if you just know somebody for a long time, you have nicknames, right? And a lot of times it's initials, like TC is Todd. I rarely call these guys, like, you know, I might say Kevin every now and then, but I say KD or Dice.
Right.
You have several.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
You have several nicknames. So I just started calling you Duron probably about last year. I feel like we're close to 50. I can't keep calling you these. I'm not even comfortable calling you Duron. It doesn't feel right. So you have three nicknames that were around during our time. So it's D-Jinx,
mm-hmm.
Jinx,
mm-hmm.
and Pretty D.
that's what I was going with, because Mose loves that one. That's a Mose killer. He loves that.
And the reason why it came from, so we all we're freshmen. We didn't know each other. You know, most of us didn't know each other coming in. So we see Duron. He's chiseled, 170 pounds, 60 pounds, curly hair, skin all clear.
Body wash.
We're like,
body wash.
I don't know who called you that first, but Pretty D was the name that's just kind of caught on. And it was just like, it seems crazy now to call another man pretty.
But that's grown man, dog.
Right. But that's what I called him for over 20 years. Like, I never really called him Duron. It's Pretty D or D or D Jinx. So my question is, which one do you prefer? D Jinx, Jinx. I know probably Pretty D is not on
the I was going to say, come on. But keep in mind, you dang near 50 now, Pretty D.
But I had to add that because Pretty D is still a part of your history.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely probably have to say D-Jinx just because, as we all know, like certain clips of time are captured by like songs or, you know, names or what you were called at a particular time. And so D-Jinx was like the family name. That's what everybody called me in college. Mm-hmm. And I truly just feel like that's what it was. Not even to be corny, but like, it was cool. Like we all were broke. We all was together all the time. We freaking ate together, you know, lived in the same facility, ran, you know, we did everything. So it was like, and I remember how I got it. It was the safety, Jason Parker.
Mm-hmm.
We came, you know, Jason came in with us and Jason's like, man, you got a cold name. I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, man, listen, this is what you should tell them to do. And it made no sense at the time. He was saying, man, you need to tell them to put D-J-E-N-X on the back of your jersey. What are you talking about? He said, D-Jinx. That's what you should tell them to put on the back of your jersey. Like, Jason Todd, they not about to do that, man. And so Jason started it and it just stuck. Jason started calling me D-Jinx and, you know, my class started calling me D-Jinx and the older guys, you know, they barely know your name at first anyway, but they would hear it and they're like, oh, okay. So I don't even know if they knew my name, to be quite honest. You know, and the only reason why the Pretty D came because they chased me down when I first got there because they cut my hair.
Everybody, they chased. It's not just you. They chased all the freshmen down.
No, I was last though.
Yeah, you went kicking last and screaming.
Yeah, I
had the locks. I mean, look at it now. But just think back then, a 17-year-old.
Yeah, man, I was.
I was high top and it was curly.
Yeah, man, I was devastated. You know what I mean? You can't be cutting a brother hair. I was devastated.
It was sweet, man. His high top was curly. We all had high tops, but it was, you know. Look at my, I mean, you can't tell now because I don't have any hair, but he was the only one who had the curly high top, man.
Pretty D.
Pretty D.
You didn't change my life. I don't even know your name no more. You Pretty D to me.
Hey, so anybody listening right now, if you see Duron walking around, and say pretty D, I guarantee you would turn around.
Oh, he turned around. Like, oh, right there.
Eyebrows.
Who is this?
I'm going to be looking like, wait, they got to be from college. I'm going to be one of y'all.
I guarantee he'll turn around. AD Jinx, man. Pretty D, Jinx. I appreciate you coming out, man. We had a good time, man.
Absolutely, man.
Good conversation.
Brothers, man. Thank you for inviting me out. Y'all are, I love this, man. I really do.
I know we held you a little bit long, but I think it was needed, man, because you have a great story, and this is what we're all about, making that transition and becoming successful. So salute to you, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. We appreciate your time, brother.
Thank you, my man.
All right, thank you, brother. Y'all be good.